Welcome to the Ferris Love Podcast, single, not stalled, pursuing sanctity in your singleness. This podcast is for Catholic women who find themselves living the single life, whether it's by choice, vocation, or circumstance. Here we believe that this time is not just a waiting period, but a season rich with purpose, growth, and grace. Join your hosts, Monica and Katie Hinderer, two sisters navigating the single life from different perspectives as we dive into conversations about faith, friendship, personal growth, and finding joy in the everyday. Let's embrace this extraordinary journey together. Hello, Monica.
Hello, Kitty. What's your high for the week?
Yeah, right? I was realizing last week we didn't do this because we anyway, it's fine. We were getting back into the swing, but I think right now my highs are in Missouri, it's still, actually currently it's 90 degrees, but the mornings are like 65, 70. And so it's just cool enough to take my like morning decaf coffee out to the porch and sit on the porch swing. And I think that is probably my highlight right now because I love that kind of weather. Okay. Yeah.
My high is that I bought an espresso machine.
Oh, yeah.
I came into a significant amount of money because my insurance finally reimbursed me for some things a while back. And I was like, okay, we could do an episode on this. I am going to treat myself and then put the rest of it towards loans, payments, and et cetera. Right. But I was going to enjoy a little bit of this surprise money. And so I bought an espresso machine because I really wanted one and I love coffee and blah, 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 blah. And so I'm obsessed. I have my latte with me here today. Like, it's just, it's so easy and convenient. I actually drink less coffee, probably less caffeine, because I have to be really intentional and mindful of every cup I create.
Sure.
Because I have to, you know, brew the whole thing. But that's my high. I'm loving it. I really am.
So fun. You know. I love that you did that too, that you like bought something, but then put the majority of the money like to paying off something that is kind of, in a sense, hanging over your head, right? For sure. Like, in a sense, is, you know, but you're also not like, well, I'm just going to throw it all there and not, you know.
Yeah. I'm definitely not taking the Dave Ramsey approach, which is like, suffer until everything's paid off, right? Like, I am being like, listen, like, some things in life that I've like, it wasn't an impulse buy. I've wanted this for a long time. And I had the opportunity to, you know, move some money. And so anyways, I was like, yeah, why not? Like, still being, you know, prudent with putting most of it towards what I need to. But yeah, this was great. And it is really just like, you make the latte and I'm like steaming the milk and I added just a little bit of like pumpkin creamer in and it literally tastes so much better than when I just poured it into my coffee. I was like, this is incredible and I'm never going back.
Amazing. I also love that you mentioned the Dave Ramsey thing because I am trying to kind of save a significant amount of money in this last quarter, Q4. The other day was like, I wonder if I could live off of like tuna and sardines and like canned chicken for 3 months. And then I decided I'm not going to do that. But I am going to like no longer buy like seltzer waters and like little things like that. You know, but anyway, that's funny.
Yeah, I think there's a balance. I think we can talk about that, right? But another episode maybe. But there's definitely a balance between, you know, being financially prudent and not wasteful, but also like enjoying the little things in life. And that's okay. Like, so
no, it's anyways, true.
But today's show, or maybe we should do homework from...
Oh, true. Homework we had talked about, well, multi-pronged. The one I had suggested was like finding ways to like give love to those around us, basically, or to talk to people that we're encountering, like those kinds of things. So I've been trying to do that a little bit more. Like I was getting Starbucks the other day because I have launched a protein coffee. And so I was like, I got to try this after the gym the other day. So I went in and used my Starbucks stars and got a free protein coffee. But I decided to go in and interact with the person that way instead of just pre-order through the app and pick it up, which is my preferred mode. And even over-ordering just through the drive-thru window. Because I was like, okay, I'm going to go in and like smile at people and interact with them and that kind of a thing. So that's what I've been kind of working on doing.
I love it.
Yeah.
I love talking about intense things. I don't really shy away from that with too many people. Although I guess there are maybe some topics that I tiptoe, but I was intentional. I met up with two friends this past week that I hadn't seen in a while. And I was intentional about bringing up maybe controversial topics, which I think because, you know, everyone says like, never talk about religion or politics. And I'm like, and yet, isn't that the only thing that matters? Isn't that really what we should be discussing? Like,
yeah, right.
You know, and so just, and I loved it, right? Because I didn't see eye to eye with them on everything. But it just opened up a really good discussion and dialogue mm-hmm. with people. And so I think sometimes we just have to kind of be willing to go there.
Yeah.
And to just maybe tolerate some discomfort and moderate the tone, right?
Mm-hmm.
And just, it's
interesting. I was thinking, and I wonder if this is true. Well, anyway, I was thinking recently that, like, I feel like if you drop hints about religion or, like, your practice of religion, so maybe it's like, oh, I went to Mass on Sunday, right? Or something along those lines. I find random people in my life, I feel like, are more willing, like, open up to me about random things. And I'm like, why are you telling me this?
Oh, interesting.
And I think it's partly because they clearly see I'm somewhat of a prayerful person or somewhat of a, like, moral person, I guess you would say. And that maybe that's not, maybe it has nothing to do with that. Maybe it's just people like to talk. But I was thinking, like, just yesterday I'm back at the gym, back with my personal trainer. And so we were just like catching up on things or whatever. And she's not told me anything about her boyfriend besides she has a boyfriend and they live together. And the next thing I know, we're like talking about it. And I had told her like my brother's getting ordained and that I take a 3-week theology yeah. course every year, you know, random things like this that clearly makes me religious in that sense. And suddenly she's telling me like, I think we're going to break up. Like, what do you think? What do you think I should do? Like, I think it's over. We've been together 3 years, but we live together. And so like, I think he's going to move out. And I was like, okay. Yeah. And so we're there like in between me doing sets of like hip thrusters and like Romanian deadlifts. I'm there like
so anyway.
Counseling her on anyway. And I was like, I wonder if that's partly just because like she feels comfortable with me and also knows I'm going to try and give her like sound advice. I don't know. Maybe it has nothing to do with religion, but I feel like it does.
Sure. Well, yeah. I do think it's interesting because I have this one friend that I met up with. Her and I are literally polar opposites. Mm-hmm. I mean, we don't have the same political opinions. She's pro-abortion. She's honestly, sometimes I think she's a witch. Like, I walked into her house and there's like some tarot cards, and I was like, okay, let's make you, you know. But she has we have a lot of shared interests and hobbies, and she's so open and so understanding and so supportive as a friend. And even though she doesn't understand, and I to her. And so we had this really very beautiful friendship, even though her and I are so, so different. Mm-hmm. And she said to me actually at dinner, she was just like, but you're just such a different Christian. And she started listing why I was a different Christian, like that I was like firm in my beliefs, but like really understanding and like held certain beliefs, but like wasn't judgmental. And I just sat there and I was like, well, that's sad because I don't think I'm that different. I think I'm trying my best to be another Christ in the world, to mm-hmm. live my faith. And I know many Christians doing that. So why do you think that I'm the only one? I shouldn't be an anomaly. I know I'm not an anomaly. I know many Christians who try to live as I do, right? And so then I'm like, are we all hiding? Is this like, right? So part of engaging in this conversation, in this dialogue, I think just helps like kind of like break the stigma and the stereotypes of Christians being bigots, being sexist, being like, I think we're othered, and it's easy to be like, well, you're pro-life, so you don't understand women's struggles. And I'm like, oh, no. I understand why someone would want an abortion. I do. Mm-hmm. I still don't think it's right. And here's why. And like, can you get to that very human level? And so actually, this is, I think, why meeting people and talking to them, although as scary as it is, I think is so important because I think people are really confused in regards to what Christianity is.
Yeah.
Or what Christians are like.
Right. Well, and I wonder too, like, you know, for this friend of yours, maybe she doesn't have any other friends who are Christian. So the only experience of Christian she has is what she sees posted onto social media, which, you know, her algorithm is probably of a certain kind because of her right. political stance and all this kind of stuff. Right. And, but I think the same happens for us too, right? Sometimes we look at people who are super liberal or who are pro-abortion and we're like, oh, they're this type.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's all we see in our feeds. And it isn't until you can truly encounter someone and learn and talk to them that you understand, like, no, like, there's no blanket stereotype for a Christian, let alone for a, whatever, atheist or a
sure.
whatever.
Well, it's interesting to assume, right, and to judge others and to mm-hmm. be like, if you're pro-abortion, like, you're advocating for the murder of innocent lives, and it's easy to assume or to mm-hmm. put a label on someone. And instead, the people that I've spoken to, I don't think I've ever encountered a pro-choice person who was like had vitriol in their mm-hmm. argument. They, I think, were trying to advocate for a good.
Sure.
And they're misinformed. That's all. Like, right. their intentions mostly are good. They're just misinformed. And so unless you can find that common ground and meet them in their humanity and try to understand why they hold a particular belief, we're yeah. never going to make any progress with them. And if we see them as just, like, bad or evil or wrong,
mm-hmm.
we forget it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. This is fascinating. We go on forever. This isn't even the topic that we were going to talk about this week.
We fell off on tangents.
We fell into the rabbit hole. So actually this week, we're this total 180. Well, not really, actually. It does have to do with people's opinions, etc. a little bit. But so we're going to actually talk about, Monica did a like 3-week alcohol-free experiment. And mm-hmm. I am currently in the midst of this 1-year alcohol-free experiment.
Wild.
And we're just going to talk about that and kind of share some of our thoughts and opinions with the caveat that I am still a big fan of craft beer. And this is not to tell you that I think alcohol is immoral or anything like that. But I think it, I mean, like most things, can be abused.
Sure.
Et cetera. But anyway, Monica, why don't you like share a little bit like your experience or like why you decided to do it? And then I can share mine.
Yeah. To be clear, I love alcohol too. I mean, I really, really do love a great cocktail. Love trying new things. I think it's lovely. Yeah. So I honestly, I did it because I was supporting a loved one who wanted to do it, and I was like, okay, can totally do it with you. I think sometimes accountability and support is like really great.
Totally.
And helps kind of get over the hump of like if it's difficult or not.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was like, yeah, totally, like, let's do it. And I think in part it was just kind of a like, sometimes it's easy to cut things out to do like, I need a reset or like, I want to get focused. And so sometimes people, when they have to get focused in their career, are going to like drop alcohol or start a diet or like exercise so that it like boosts that motivation and the feeling good yep. and like all this stuff. And so, I was shocked at how good I felt.
Mm-hmm.
Mainly my sleep. I was like, whoa, I wasn't waking up in the middle of the night anymore. And I wasn't waking up as tired. I chronically wake up tired, and there's a lot of reasons for that. But I was like shocked that I just felt so different. Just like sleep-wise, sleep alone. And I was like, wow, like this is crazy.
This is wild.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. It is true. The sleep thing I think is, I actually think sleep is the biggest myth around alcohol. Because I know a lot of people who are like, I'm just going to have a quick, like, I'm just going to have a glass of wine so I can fall asleep well tonight.
Mm.
So I can sleep well. You know, I've got a couple of friends who are like that. Like if they had a really rough day and they think they're not going to sleep well, or they haven't been sleeping well for a couple of days in a row, they'll have a glass of wine before they go to bed.
Well, there's a difference between falling asleep and staying. Exactly. So it might help you fall asleep, but it doesn't mean that you're then going to get restful sleep.
Right. And you might even stay asleep, but the science behind it is like just so fascinating that they say like even one glass of alcohol, right? One whatever drink of any kind can reduce your REM sleep by up to 40%. Like that's crazy, right? Like you need REM. REM is like where you get your actual rest. It's
and heal,
you know,
where your where body you heal. Restorative.
It's where your mind processes things that happen to you throughout the day. It's where memory is created and stored, right? Like all of these things happen in your REM, and like to lose up to 40%. And like, just think, like, even if you're like, this is what I think is fascinating, because everyone's like, with me giving it up for a year, everyone's like, oh my gosh, do you have a problem? Like even mom asked me this, like, do you have a problem? And I was like, no.
Yeah, that's interesting.
But if I'm having, let's say I have 2 or 3 beers a week, like I go out for friends, you know, with friends on a Friday, and then I have a beer on Saturday, that's several nights in a row that I'm losing sleep and not sleeping as well as I could and should, etc.
Yeah, conservative to say.
Well, exactly.
And then you went out to a brewery and had one. Like, no, you didn't.
Yeah. Well, like, who does? I'm like at a friend's house and we're having like a beer with dinner or whatever. But like, but I'm not. But my point is, I'm not like drinking every night. Like, this is not like oh no, like, should I go on the show Intervention or should I intervene for myself? Like, well, this is a, you know.
Yeah. And
I think our standard.
Yeah. I was drinking every night. And I think some people are like scandalized by that. But it's not. I can have just one. Like, I liked the process or the ritual of making a cocktail.
Sure.
And of sitting down and having a cocktail in the evening. And sometimes, honestly, you guys, so freaking brain dead from being a therapist that I would like put on soft music and have a cocktail and lay in a candlelit room and just detox.
Yep.
Right.
Yeah.
Decompress. So, you know, and maybe that's why I noticed it so sharply, because I was in a sense kind of like hurting my sleep every night and not even necessarily realizing it, because it was just like the norm. And so even just kind of 3 weeks, like a quick detox.
Right.
I was able to like what you have to do, what I had to do, because I think I've found that I'm a pretty like ritualistic person. I like patterns and consistency. That I had to substitute the ritual with something else.
Sure.
And by creating that habit, even though I've returned to drinking alcohol, I don't drink it the same way anymore.
Sure.
Because I have a different like ritual on a Tuesday night.
Yeah. Well, and I think it's interesting too, like it's so interesting, like this idea around alcohol, like it is very ritualistic, but it's also a very treat yourself mentality. It's also a very, I've had a bad day, so have something. I've had a good day, so I should celebrate and have something. Like, it's one of the only things that were like used for all circumstances, right? Like break glass in emergency for all emergencies of all types, right? Bad day, good day, great. Drink, wedding, funeral, drink, right? Like, this is why so many funeral homes used to be built next to bars.
And then you also have to think, like, I had this moment where I was like going to someone's house for the first time. So I was like, oh, a housewarming, what do you bring them? And then thinking, oh, someone is celebrating something, what do you bring them? And it's like, my mind is like, I always move to alcohol. And I was like, that's so interesting. And then I was like, what do you give someone as like a congratulations on a promotion? What do you give some, like, and I had to think about that and be like, alcohol is like the easy gift and go-to, which is completely fine until, you know, you've got a friend who's like not really drinking and you're like, oh shoot, what do I give them? Like, wait, what do I do? And you have to be a little bit more mindful of, and I think that's part of it. One of the really cool things that, I mean, cause I've done this before. I mean, I was really sick for a period of time and I couldn't drink for months.
Right.
But I think what ends up happening, or what I've noticed, and Kitty, so I'll be so curious about how this year starts to play out for you, but how when you take alcohol away, you have to become so much more mindful. Like, I had to become mindful of my evening rituals. I couldn't just be an autopilot in the evening of like what is typically relaxing for me. I had to be like mindful of going to social events and how I showed up there, or because like I wasn't always going to bring alcohol, or I wasn't going to be drinking at that event, and that shifts the dynamic. And or like I just said, right, you're celebrating something for someone, and like you don't bring them a bottle of champagne, and then you have to be thoughtful or intentional about the gift you are giving them.
Sure.
And it kind of forces you, I think anytime you change a major routine, it forces you to be more mindful and thoughtful about what I'm doing, what I'm consuming, how, when, where, why.
Yeah. No, it's true. And it's really interesting because I have, I was going to say, I have a lot of friendships based around craft beer.
Yeah.
That sounds bad, but like I have, but like that idea of like rituals, like I have several friends who our ritual is very much like we go for a hike and then we go to a craft brewery. And like every time we go for a hike, we go for a beer. And like, we're not going for a hike every day, but you know what I mean? Like, okay, once a month, twice a month, we're like doing that. We'll go hike 12 miles and we'll go have a couple beers, right? And like have a good time. And so it is really forcing me to kind of rethink that, but also to think, how can I do some of these things without ruining the experience for the other?
Oh, yeah.
You know, because like I, like these friends that I hike with, like I don't want them to have to give up alcohol for an entire year because I've decided to give up alcohol for an entire year. Right. So, so what I started doing is looking up like, okay, which breweries can we go to that also offers like a non-alcoholic version?
Oh, that's so fun.
So we can still keep our routine, our like really fun, like we love doing this and this is like very much a part of our friendship. How can we continue doing that? But I can still, you know, do this. And so like I look these things up ahead of time, or I've, you know, figured out a different way of doing it. But yeah, it definitely takes way more thought.
Yeah, you have to be really mindful. And I think I don't think that's a bad thing. It takes a little bit more time and energy or effort, but
exactly. I went to an Oktoberfest this weekend, and like I love Oktoberfest celebrations of all kinds. I love all the fall and winter beers. They're like literally my favorite beers. And that was really hard. And at first, like these friends were like, do you want to go? And at first I was going to say no. Cause like, what do you do at an Oktoberfest if you're not drinking?
You eat a pretzel.
And I was like, but I could go. And exactly. I was like, I can go and eat some brats and have a pretzel and like, whatever. And like, go and hang out with them. Like, why not? And I went, and there was a booth that did have some non-alcoholic beer, which was cool. So I got, you know, a can of that and like hung out with people. And then I drank a lemonade. And I as I was standing there ordering the lemonade, I was like, I think this is the first time ever at a beer event I've ordered something that's not a beer. I was like, this is weird.
I will say, this is easier than ever before.
Totally.
Because, I mean, Gen Z is, like, notorious for not drinking.
Yeah, they're the least drunk generation.
Yeah, and so I think to accommodate for that, I mean, the number of, like, menus and places that have mocktails and non-alcoholic options. Like, I literally have in my house non-alcoholic beers and non-alcoholic spirits because I have some friends who have just chosen for... Well, one, my friends are all like in a stage of having babies, so they're often not drinking, or they're like breastfeeding or whatever. And then I have some friends who are just like, I just don't like the way it makes me feel anymore. I just don't like it, and I just so. I mean, like, to be a good host, it's so funny how it's changed over the years. To be a good host, I have non-alcoholic options, and I can make you a mocktail and have these things. And I'm like, wow, this is so interesting how it's changed over time. Shifting kind of away from everyone always needs to be boozing, because you're right. It used to be, are you an alcoholic or are you pregnant? Like, if you weren't drinking, it was like, why? And now it's kind of like, okay. Okay.
Yeah, like, what? Yeah, it's really intriguing. So I decided to do it for my birthday this year to my birthday next year, to try it for a year. Partly because several years ago, probably she's 3 or 4 now. We had a sister who did a dry January. And she listened to the Andrew Huberman podcast on alcohol. And she was like, everyone needs to listen to this. This is crazy. And I had listened to it at the time and fell down a rabbit hole of information and science about alcohol and what it really does to the body and how horrible it is and how it's a class 1 carcinogenic, according to the World Health Organization, equal with tobacco. and, you know, all these other things. And I was like, oh my gosh. Okay. And like, here we are. But at the same time, I feel like I was still very much in this place of like, I didn't want to give up all the things that alcohol accompanied.
Mm-hmm.
So for instance, right, like in our family, we love to go to this place near my parents' house that's called Flight, and they serve flights of beer, and we go for trivia. And I was like, oh my gosh, like giving that up for a whole year, even if I only go 3 times a year when I'm up visiting, like that's a lot, right? And giving up this hiking and then beer. And so I had a really hard time. So for several years, I was like debating it and then didn't, and debating it and didn't. But I completed 75 hard a couple times in that span. And in those 75 days, you can't have alcohol. That's one of the criteria for it. And after that, I was like, oh, like I'm starting to see like a difference between drinking and not drinking, just in terms of like the way I feel, the way I sleep overall. So I'm like, this will be a good experiment to do for a year and just see, like, does it make a long-term difference overall? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, I feel as though I refused for periods of time to do 75 hard because I was unwilling to give up alcohol. It was literally the only reason. And the thought of giving it up felt insurmountable to me, which that was a little bit of a wake-up call where I'm like, why are you not letting this go? Can you not let it go? Can you let it go? Like, what does that mean? But I think that's a good, like, litmus test. That's a good check-in point where it's like, well, would I be able to do this? Like, do I want to do this? Do I feel inclined to do this? Or do I have a negative visceral reaction to doing it? Not whether or not can you, right? Because mistakes happen and we fall short and things. It's not about success. It's about, well, what comes up when that idea is proposed to me? And because I feel like at that point in my life, it was a lot of, I had to step back and look at that and be like, why am I so attached to this where I refuse? And it made me like angry. And I realized, because then also keep drinking, do whatever you want. But again, do it mindfully where now I'm looking at it and I'm like, okay, now I understand that in that period of my life, it absolutely was a social crutch for me at times. And the idea of having to go on dates and go to these parties and go to these events without a social lubricant was like, I will not. I refuse. I can't do that. And, but that also then gave me insight into, okay, how do I make those things a little bit easier for me and what's going on there? Right. And so it's really just kind of, I think, being reflective of like, well, what role does this play in my life and what kind of comes up when I think about getting rid of it or giving it up, right? If the idea of like an entire year, I could never, okay, why? What's coming up, right? Like that I'm struggling to let go of.
Right. Yeah. And it's funny because I thought about doing it just for like Q4, right? Like just to the end of 2025 or whatever. And then I was like, no. Like, cause even when I gave up caffeine 2 years ago, it took a long time for me to really see the difference between being on caffeine and being off of caffeine. And like a month or two was not enough time for me to see long-term, like whether it was good for me or not. And, you know, there's caffeine, there's like mixed studies on it. Like for some people, some scientists say it's really good for you in moderation. Others are like, no. And that's why I needed to do a little bit of like a trial of one. To see like, okay, but for me and for my body, like, is this okay? Right. Like, does this work? And it was super clear after a year that like caffeine and me aren't a mix.
Well, and it's so interesting too, because you like even doing some of the blood work stuff for like fasting, caffeine will send you into a different metabolic state. And it's not supposed to, like, you're supposed to be able to drink black coffee on a fast. Supposed to, like, air quotes here, right? Like, and then I think to Katie's point is that everyone's body is so different. Her and I, we kind of chuckle because I can drink an espresso at 7 p.m. and still go to bed. I can still go to bed by like 10 or 11. I could be asleep. And that my body processes caffeine very differently than Katie's. And one time we were actually working, actually the Eucharistic conference, and we were running a booth and we were so tired. And I was like,
but I was off caffeine at this point. I'd been off for a year at this point.
But we were tired. You had a headache. And I was like, I will go to Starbucks and I'll get us some coffee. And I think like yours was just a coffee. And I was so struggling that I was like, triple espresso. I need a triple espresso. And I don't know how the coffees were labeled incorrectly or something. I got Katie's. Katie got mine. And I was falling asleep. Like, I was like, why is this not working? And Katie was shaking and couldn't sleep that night. I couldn't even fall asleep till like 4 a.m. Like, that's in, like, our bodies are different.
But I think the interesting thing is, I used to be able to, like, I drank so much caffeine. I drank so much Coke. I was drinking it all the way to 7 p.m. Like, whatever. People was like, do you want a coffee? And, like, we were going out late. I'd be like, yeah, why would I get decaf? Like, it doesn't make any difference. Like, it didn't impact. I thought it didn't affect me at all. Mm. And it wasn't until I went off of it. And part of it, I went off of it because people who suffer from migraines, they often tell you you should not drink caffeine. And then when you do have a migraine, to drink caffeine a little bit because it'll help reset. And so part of me, I went off it for that to see, like, okay, will this help me migraines? It doesn't really help my migraines to have caffeine now when I'm off of it. But I do find that I think I get less migraines now that I'm not on caffeine and I'm not beholden to making sure I get it.
Yeah.
But then I also didn't realize how jittery it was making me without me even realizing it. And I've been off for an entire year. Or actually, I was off for 2 years. And this summer, I kind of fell back. I fell off the wagon and we had a ton of caffeine while we were in Spain doing the Camino and all of that kind of stuff. And I didn't fully go back off this summer. And, you know, by the end of the summer, I was like, why am I so jittery all the time? Like, why am I like so not like feeling anxious, like not anxious, but like feeling anxious. And physical. I was like, it's because I'm back on caffeine.
Yeah.
And like, and that's, you know, that's one of the things that they say for caffeine is that it increases, like, it regularly drinking it can be linked to increased anxiety and depression for people because it significantly alters moods. So, like, yeah, like, it could absolutely, you know, do those things. So, you know.
Yeah. All in all, I think kind of what we're sharing today is this journey that Katie's on, that I've been on. Because then I was just thinking, I was like, oh, my gosh, yeah, actually this time last year I had another health thing. And I stepped away from caffeine and alcohol again for probably 6 weeks. To do a gut reset and gluten, like all of it, stepped away from.
Oh, yeah, that's
right. I was so strict with pretty much until we went away. I think the first like alcohol, maybe not the first alcohol, certainly the first beer I had was when we were, you know, out west.
Oh, sure. Or the ordination for in December.
I don't even think I did beer. But the alcohol, yes, was like the first, right? So months of like nothing, but. Anyways, I think the point of this episode is to share and that Katie's on this journey, but that this, I don't know, I guess kind of the summary is like this mindful, like, detox of particular things in your life of like, well, what does it look like to step away from something that I've been really consistent with? What does it look like to step away from alcohol and to give that up, or caffeine and to give that up? And kind of the willingness to like be very mindful with your life choices. And
I think too, like, if you've had that inkling, like, I should try this. Oh, but I could never because X, Y, Z, because my social life revolves around it, because my family will think I have a problem, because whatever, I'm not going to be able to celebrate this, that, the other. I would also encourage you, like, just try it and don't look at, oh my gosh, I have to do it for this amount of time. How am I ever going to make it through? You know, like you were saying with 75 hard, like looking and you're like, oh my gosh, 75 days. Like, who cares? You make it through today and you manage today. And then you try and manage tomorrow. It's the same way like alcoholics work it out actually. But like
everybody,
when you look at, it's the same with if we're doing diet or exercise or anything, if you look at like the full trajectory of like what your life might look like, it's really overwhelming. But if you're like, well, today I can go without alcohol, or today I can go without caffeine, or today I can go without processed sugars, right? Like, okay. And then you can maybe do it tomorrow.
Yeah.
Right.
Agreed. Yeah. I think, so maybe a takeaway from this week and something for our listeners to think about is, you know, what habit or thing are you kind of mindlessly participating in could you go alcohol free? What comes up when you kind of think about that? Or what's something that you could challenge yourself to change your interaction with, to be a little bit more kind of mindful of your own body, of your own life, and the way that these external things are affecting that.
Yeah. I think too, you know, as we're talking, I love this. I was also thinking, like, how much of our Catholic faith revolves around alcohol. Yeah. But I think especially even for young people, like, think about it, like, theology on tap.
Yeah.
Right? Or, like, I'm speaking next week, I'm speaking at a young adults event, and it's at a brewery, you know? Like, which is cool and all that kind of stuff, but I think it is really interesting that, like, so much of what we do, especially in our world today, revolves around that. And so maybe it's not, you know, going cold turkey like me and giving it up entirely, but maybe it's thinking like, maybe it's a little bit less. Maybe it's giving yourself the challenge of going to an event and not drinking at it, trying an NA or asking for a mocktail instead or whatever. And seeing, like, was your experience really so different?
Mm.
You know, we just had a baby shower for our brother's wife. And we had it at a brewery. And I was really like, oh my gosh, like, it's just going to be a really different experience for me.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end of it, I was like, this really wasn't that different at all.
Amazing. You're like, wait a minute.
Like, not at all. I had two mocktails that they made.
Yeah.
Basically like fruit juice.
Yeah.
But I got to the end and I was like, this day went no differently than it would have if I had a beer. You know, but yeah. I was confident that it was going to be a very different experience, and it wasn't. So, you know,
I like that.
Do that. Yeah.
Well, because I think what it does is it just challenges our assumptions, and then it actually like kind of challenges like what we think our needs are, and that actually like I can do this. Like I can go on a date and not have to have a cocktail. Like I can. You know, and again, there's literally nothing wrong with it, in moderation, right? But I think that because you're single years, you are able to be very self-focused, right? You are that. Let's make sure that self-focus is directed towards a great self-awareness and a full flourishing and not a selfishness.
Right.
And so this type of practice helps us do that.
Right. And like now in your single years are the moments that you're creating these habits and these lifestyles that are likely going to continue in your marriage. Right. And so if you're drinking 7 days a week, is that like, do you want to be a married woman and a mom drinking 7 days a week? Do you, you know what I mean? Like these are things that we need to consider because it's not just like I get married and then a switch gets flipped and suddenly like, I'm just drinking with the girls when we go out on Saturday night once a month. Like that's not how it's going to happen. Right. Yeah. And so it's a really, yeah, it's all of these things, you know, add up over time. And
yeah. All right. Well, that's it for this week on Single Not Stalled. We hope this episode gave you new insights and a renewed sense of purpose in your daily life. Wherever you are on your journey, remember that God is with you, and this season is filled with opportunities for growth, flourish, and to make an impact. If you are loving this podcast, please take a moment to rate and review. It helps more women like you find this community. And don't forget to subscribe so you never miss an episode. Join us on social media at Single Not Stalled. We'd love to hear your thoughts and ideas. Until next time, keep living fully and walking boldly.